The forest calls, and heroes shall answer!
The old Margrave Forest is an ancient wood, already old when most of the gods were young. Kingdoms rise and fall beyond its borders, but the Margrave remains a world apart, a place where memories and old magic linger in the rings of trees. It has plenty of secrets and treasures to tempt adventurers, but those who fail to honor the old ways do not return.
The 60 pages of the Margrave Player's Guide for 5th Edition give you everything you need to journey into the deep, dark woods and come out again alive, or achieve a hero's death worthy of story and song. Here you'll find 3 new playable races from the deep woods, new barbarian primal paths for barefolk characters, forest-themed class options for clerics, druids, rangers, rogues, warlocks, and wizards, 13 new companion beasts, including everything from alligators and falcons to a giant mongoose, forest hounds, and rare stags. 6 new feats and a new forest dweller background with a feral variant. 45 new spells, including Shadow Tree, Legion of Rabbit Squirrels, Mark Prey, and Revive Beast. New magic items, including Bracelet of the Fire Tender, Circlet of Holly, and Sickle of Thorns.
The gods speed you on your quest, heroes. Stay to the path. Beware the human-sounding whispers from the shadows. And never, ever light a torch after midnight.
Support Crit Academy by picking up this amazing product at www.critacademy.com/koboldpress.
Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Brandon.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
This podcast was created to provide you, our heroes, with new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Our show may not be suitable for young children, but neither is our D&D games.
We hope to inspire...
I don't know why I registered that way in my head.
Oh, God. We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
What Ian said. We want to thank you guys for joining us today at Crit Academy Studios, where everything's made up and your roles don't matter. Anybody? Anybody at all?
Yep, that's right. Your roles are like a monster without any loot.
Yeah, we're not on the ball today.
Where did that tiger keep that 16 silver?
I know, right? Or how about that that stupid wolf with the greatsword in him? Oh, man. We got a really great episode for you guys today. Thanks, everyone who's joined us on Twitch here. If you don't know, we stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/CritAcademy every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. So thank you guys for joining us. That's hot. We got a really great show for you guys today. We got an interesting Let's Talk About Blank segment question from DM Pyre in regards to one of his players loving Dark Souls just a smidge too much. Our main topic today is Monster Loot by Anne Gregerson. If you're new to the show, Anne has been joined us several times to talk about several of her amazing products. If you haven't checked those out, go back and check those previous episodes. The one was Sir Alkian's Guide to the Apocalypse, an absolutely masterful resource for any DM who wants to run an apocalyptic setting. And she gives you a variety of different ways the apocalypse has happened, which is dope. And of course, we always had her on for little heroes running children at the table or running with children at the table. It was very exciting. She did a great job and she just cracks me the hell up, man. Awesome lady.
She's also usually half asleep when she's
Yeah, it's like 1 a.m. when she's on. I feel bad for her. Our main topic today is the monster loot, and I'm really excited for this because I'm surprisingly, this isn't really in in the rules at all, really.
Yeah, I mean, you go through some of these, like, wait, why isn't this in the rules?
Right? So it's really cool because we always have had players who want to jump out and I'm going to try to take this Gorgon eye from Medusa or cut off her head so I can use it, you know.
I loot the body.
So the supplement we're covering, Monster Loot, has all those sorts of little nitty-gritty details. So that's exciting. And of course, we have our Unearthed Tips and Tricks where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Yeah. Yeah, the only reason you listen to us.
Brandon, what is in the Unearthed Tips and Tricks for those who don't know?
Our Unearthed Tips and Tricks consist of encounters, character concepts, monster variants, a magic item, a player tip, and a DM tip.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's basically...
Just the tip.
Oh, God. If we were a hulking dragon and you slit us open, it would be our heroes that we've devoured, all their leftovers spewing out. Or just the horde, I guess that would have made more sense. But anyway.
Some of my favorite Skyrim things. The first dragon that you kill at that tower, when you look into its inventory, it has guard armor in it.
Awesome. But before all that, we spend a few minutes talking about what's going on in our realms. Brandon, what's going on in your realm?
I spent the last 2 days moving all my shit.
And he's got a lot of shit. A lot of shit.
I got the PC reformatted. I reinstalled Medibang. I'm trying to find the proper driver for my tablet, which is near impossible because it's a cheap-ass thing. I still got to get WoW Classic, too.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really it. Ian?
Well, I, over the weekend, finally, starting last winter, finished all of the episodes of The Simpsons.
That's a hell of an accomplishment.
Like, literally all of them?
All of them. All 662 episodes, according to Google.
Damn. That's that.
How many?
I feel like we need to give him like a golf clap or something. Golf clap? Golf clap.
According to Wikipedia, it's 662 episodes.
662?
Yeah.
And how many does One Piece have?
More than that, over 1,000. Right?
So. Yeah, but I think One Piece doesn't really stop year round, though.
Well, that's true.
The Simpsons just airs a season.
Gotcha.
And that was like a few fun times too over the weekend playing D&D when I think a DM discovered. My dwarf, who's a fortune main cleric who never resists fire, has no problems lighting himself on fire when he's grappled.
Burn, baby. Sounds like a good friend of yours, Brandon. He's done that. Okay. Killed himself.
Actually, I got grappled by a giant frog-like creature that had tentacles. Mm. I'm like, well, I can't beat this in strength or dex, so I'm going to cast heat armor on myself.
Let him go or burn, bitch. Love it.
Yep. Of course, the catch, though, was it turned out he also resisted fire.
Of course, because, you know, DM thought of that ahead of time, I suppose.
No, it actually wasn't the secure stat block.
Oh, really? Wow. I totally would have called out, like, you're making that up.
Well, it's been a few times.
You're making that up.
Justin, what's going on in your realm?
Actually, I just spent the weekend camping, and for those of you who know, I'm not really a big camper at all. My ancestors, the cavemen, slept on the dirt. I have a bed and a house, so not really my jams, but my wife really enjoys it, so we went out and we did that. And I actually ran D&D for my wife and her sister and her brother... her brother-in-law. So I'm really excited to talk a little bit about that. Actually, the monster, the character concept's going to be the character my wife ran, and it had us cracking up. Despite all of Alicia's, hey, the game's boring, she seemed to be really into it, and she was really a great role player. So it was a lot of fun. On another note, in 2 days, World of Warcraft Classic comes out, so I will be streaming the shit out of that. I will be playing. I took a day off, so I'll hopefully be playing that all day, so you can come and watch me get my mage on. So it's really exciting. I had a blast. We gave the dogs a bath today, and it was bad. It was really bad. So,
she's a garden hose. Go!
Yeah, she likes to. Alicia likes to take him to like those fancy showers and stuff, and it's a pain in the ass. Buck hates people and barks all the time, and then tries to jump out and commit suicide. It's so bad, I guess.
I don't know how people can do that. Did you really watch those episodes at 2x speed?
Yeah.
Ugh.
You watch your show? I forgot he does. He watches everything at 2x speed.
I watch anime at 3x speed.
Because you read faster than
I read the subtitles.
Although I will admit,
what the fuck is going on? I'll admit though, there are some shows where with some action scenes I do slow it down just because
right. You want to see it all and get it all.
Well, that and some shows the action scenes are a bit too chaotic. Just yeah.
Very cool. I think that'll do it for In the Realm. Brandon, if they'd like to visit other realms, how can they do so?
Yes, Doggo, I see you do. They can visit Crit Academy at CritAcademy.com, where we have a link to Audible. And if you join through us, yeah, you get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook. And you get to keep that audiobook even if you cancel your subscription. Plus, if you go through our site, that gives us money. So do it.
Yeah, definitely. quickly before we move on, there's a link in the little boxes below. You can click on those to follow along and look at the product we're going to be discussing, as well as our show notes. So we got a really interesting question for our Let's Talk About Blank segment from DMpire. I've been DMing for my circle of friends for about a year now, and a new player wants to build a hollow human character based almost exactly on the hollows in Dark Souls games. I know next to nothing about Dark Souls franchise other than you die. A lot.
Yep.
How would you implement a mechanism of being hollow within the game? He's mentioned that he wants a long-term character goal to be to find humanity and become not hollow. Hopefully this makes more sense to you guys than it did to me.
Yeah.
So, for the record, I've only played the first Dark Souls.
I played the first one, and I played the one that came before the Demon Souls.
Right.
Which I think a lot of people actually like better.
What about you, B?
I played partially through Dark Souls 3, but I can't remember what the hollowed are.
That's what the player characters are.
Yeah, so the if you haven't played Dark Souls, the hollowed are the player characters. They basically are somewhere between completely undead and life, and it's kind of like a degenerative disease, and the more you go follow your hollow, you start to become like a mindless zombie if you reach full hollowification, or what I forget what it's called, but like a lot of the enemies that you fight, that slow moving zombies, those are like hollows that weren't able to find their humanity. And the goal is, as a player, you shift back and forth by using humanity, which is like souls or something, right?
Or slang wasses.
Right. And so, to my understanding, in order to kind of gain the humanity back, you need to have some sort of goal in mind to obtain and work towards it, to my understand.
Yep.
What's really cool, though, is they are kind of invincible, I think, as far as
the fact that you don't stay dead. You just keep coming back.
Yeah, so Wizard Cadius actually says, if you die, you are destroyed, and as you kill, you restore yourself. So to me, the way I would take this as a mechanic in D&D, if you really want to give the player this experience, I would say use the Unearthed Arcana Revenant. Was that brought into any books?
I don't think so as of right now. I know it was a race and past editions.
Right.
So.
I would recommend the Unearthed Arcana Revenant. It basically is a free download. The link is in our show notes. And when you use it, you basically come back to life and you are kind of undead-ish and you have some sort of goal to achieve. In this case, it sounds like your player wants to achieve humanity. So I would put that as like the capstone goal that this character's end result is. And so when he gets to that goal, maybe at the end of the campaign, or somewhere in the middle, he becomes human, and you can change between his stat blocks, between the Revenant race and the human, and change it when he achieves that goal.
Like, my take, though, is I think it would be kind of difficult to...
Would agree.
For just, especially just for one player character to adhere to what happens in Dark Souls, and have it not be broken, and be unfair for everyone else.
Because they can keep coming back to life pretty regularly, right?
Effectively, yes. I mean, the best I would come up with was, I'm like, okay, we'll just use a regular human stat block, but we'll just say just for player purposes, you died, but you came back with a purpose.
Right. And that's kind of what I originally thought. That's why I ended up finding the Revenant, because the Revenant's whole goal is that whole shtick. They've got a goal. They come back for that goal, in this case, to become fully human. To me, that should be a goal that they're working towards, and as a DM, you should be putting in the challenges ahead of them that help them acquire that humanity. So to me, that says putting them in a situation where they have to make very big moral decisions. What is humanity, right? Humanity is compassion. Humanity is love, lust, greed, all those things. So putting that character, that player into those situations, maybe talk to the player and say, hey, as a hollow, you're kind of blank on the emotional scale, right? Kind of like Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang. You're emotionally detached, and as you
Penny?
Sheldon? Yeah. Anyways.
Okay. Not gonna lie, though, when I saw this tip, I was like, I want him to play a big hollow. I'm like from Bleach! From Dark Souls. Oh.
the hollow from Bleach would have been really cool. But anyways, I think this is something that comes with its challenges, but talk to the player and start them as this little emotional robot thing, and then give them opportunities to build their persona to their humanity. I think this is something that's come up before, maybe not on our show, but people who play their characters who are blank and then develop their personality as they go. I think this would be a good way to do that, and you could do it by putting them in situations where they got to make, is greed wrong, is sacrificing people wrong, you know, is it better for the good, greater good sort of thing. And by putting up those situations, you can have him develop his humanity, and through that process use flavor to enhance it by him starting out black and gray and undead and ashen, and then, you know, his body starting to, you know, knit itself back together, maybe start to grow muscles, and by the end of it he's a full-fledged human and you just change his stat block.
Oh my gosh, we're being attacked by a mummy. So did you take it off the mummy? Yeah, turns out it was actually a burn victim.
Oh no. I think we answered this question. Do you what do you guys think? Do you have any other points on this topic?
There's definitely not a one size fits all answer for this one, especially with what kind of game you want too. And I could definitely see it where, at the very least, if you wanted to do it in line mechanically speaking to what the video games does, just don't do it for one player, do it for all of them.
Yeah. I honestly think if you're going to avoid avoid the mechanics in the game and follow something that's mostly flavor based, like we were just talking. So, B?
Yeah, I was confused on it. What was it that I said earlier?
I don't know.
I texted it to you. Said, hey, we got this question. It's kind of odd. What do you guys got for an answer?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know. He can, as he kills enemies, he gets their souls, and he can spend those souls on feats or something.
And leveling up and shit.
I don't know.
Anyways, I think that'll do it for our Let's Talk About Blank segment. D-Empire, we hope we answered your question. If we didn't, feel free to send a letter to the complaint department at critacademy@gmail.com and put all your rants, and make sure to put in the title, rant, so I can just throw it in the can. All right, that'll do it. Before we move on to our main topic, every week we like to give away fat loots to people who take time to visit our website and sign up, or follow us on Twitch or follow us on YouTube. And as a reward, we give away 3 products. The first one today we're going to be giving away is from Goblin Stone.
Each episode, we will draw one lucky subscriber's name, and they will win the 5-star rated adventure, Banquet of the Damned, compliments of Goblin Stone. Goblin Stone is a community project for D&D fans based out of the UK. They aim to be a place where you can team up with professionals to turn your ideas into high-quality products and give every fan a chance to get published. Be sure to head over to www.goblinstone.com, or you can check out our fellowship link on our website, www.critacademy.com.
Brandon, who's our winner today?
Our winner today is Lord Yig 76.
Yeah, yeah.
There we go.
Yay!
Yeet! Congratulations, Lord Yig 76. If you enjoy the adventure, please leave Goblin Stone a review. Now on to our main topic. That was good. I like that.
The main topic.
Once again, this amazing product, Monster Loot, Monster Manual, Volume 1. Now, to to kick this off, she has already done three volumes of this. The Monster Manual, Volo's Guide, and Tome of Foes, I believe.
How dare she be thorough.
Yeah, so she's actually doing, as of this recording, she has a very special bundle offer. I'll go ahead and toss it in the loot where you can get all of them at a significant discount. So if that's something you're interested in and so you like supporting writers, make sure you do that. Where's my link here? Here we go. So
I don't know, Wizard. They're bagpipes.
What? Are those... Who knows? I just, that's something I found because I couldn't play the cooler shit.
They sound like Irish pipes.
Irish. So what exactly is Monster Loot? I talked about it briefly earlier. So when brave adventurers face the dangers of the world, they want something to show for it. This supplement provides individual loot for each monster in the Monster Manual, and by extension for the other books, the other ones, as well as basic crafting and harvesting system that works well with the 5e Dungeons & Dragons. With this supplement, these brave adventurers will be able to craft hide, teeth, and claws of their enemies into dangerous weapons and equipment that is sure to mark them as legendary heroes in the realm. I really like that intro. It is dope as hell. Well done.
Dude, is that a troll's head that you're wearing as a hat?
Yep.
It looks good on me.
It's staring at me. Make it stop.
Make it stop. So I'm really excited to talk about this. There's a lot of good stuff in it. What?
Your wife. Hey, I didn't get any loot from those two creatures I killed yesterday.
It was a one shot.
Yeah, you didn't actually say I'm gonna loot the corpse, so I just assumed you walked away. So there was a dead corpse on the ground, and so her character has like no sense of personal boundaries or any of that sort of stuff. She just walks up, picks up the corpse, and drags it around. So weird. So this was a really interesting book. She goes into a lot of details. The first thing she talks about is harvesting checks, and she gives you the different details that in the process that's involved in harvesting from creatures. So, for instance, creatures that are creature types of beast, dragon, giant, monstrosity, and plant all require a harvesting nature check, while something like a celestial fiend or undead requires a religion harvesting check. And she breaks all the different class or different types up by the appropriate check, which is great because honestly, I probably would just have slapped a nature check on every single one of these. So it's nice to have that guide. And she gives you the rules for determining the harvesting check, which is DC 10 plus the monster CR. So the higher the monster, the less likely you are to succeed at actually harvesting something dangerous from it. Now, for clarification, there are a few monsters that already have small details in it. Like, I know the purple worm you can harvest the purple worm venom from them. So,
but those are pretty few and far between, though, in comparison to...
Which is why I think this is such a great book.
And there's a few of these that are so obvious, like, wait, why aren't these in the rules?
Right. Yeah, I think we were talking about that before the show. she's fun. Alicia's funny. So the other thing she touches on that I thought was a super interesting and important detail, harvesting time. She gives rules and guidelines for how long it should take to harvest a creature based on its size. And I think that's fantastic because I wouldn't have considered that. I just was like, oh, give me a check, you get it, and you're good. No, what if while you're harvesting it, something else jumps out and attacks you because it's drawn to the corpse or whatever you killed?
Or even worse, you kill a very large creature and you know it has that one thing that you got to get. It's like, oh, I need something on this beast for a component, but we're on a timed mission.
Oh, no.
So do I follow the mission, come back, and hope nothing eats this thing?
That's cool. Like, or a gargantuan creature is 8+ hours.
Or if you kill like a giant creature. Yes! I killed this big thing! Yeah, roll your nature check. Okay, what's it tell me? Yeah, you just realized something. That's the baby.
Oh, what? No. that's funny.
Like an Alaskan bullworm.
Yeah, usually, Alicia, when somebody kills something, they immediately say, I loot the body!
That's what you've done every time in our campaign so far.
What, loot the body?
I've noticed anytime something dies, you go, I want to loot it.
Well, yeah, it's or, fat loots.
Or remember with my old group, loot the bodies on the floor. Loot the bodies on the floor.
That's great. I love that. So now that you've got, she's given rules for harvesting, challenge ratings, and the harvesting time. The book breaks the loot types into several different aspects from with special keywords such as vial, ration, or crafted. Different details like that so that you kind of understand what it is you're getting from it. Generally, if you harvest, say, a bear, and I'm just making it up. I haven't actually included the stats on here.
Bear.
If you loot a bear, it might say, you know, how much meat you get from it and how long it'll last. So they break it. She breaks it down and does a good job breaking it down into the different formats. And there's several more than I named, but when you pick up the book, you can check that out yourself. So what we've done is gone ahead and picked several monsters that we thought had very interesting loot tables that we wanted to talk about. Now, what's so amazing is that she's managed to stick the items into the flavor of the monster, which is just fantastic. So one of the first ones that I picked that I thought was fantastic is the Obelith. Now, this is a very big creature. It's monstrous. It's legendary. Everyone knows how dangerous these bad boys are. So killing one isn't super simple, generally. I think they're at CR 10. They're
especially since they are virtually immortal and always come back.
Right. So on this creature's loot table, when we manage to defeat this monster enslaving beast, we get 1d3 Obelith Eye. The Obelith Eye can be used as an additional material component when casting spells, charm person, and suggestion. So that's already something different. This is an additional component. So why add components? We don't like tracking components. That's a waste of time. Well, this one you're going to want to, because when it's used in this way, the target of the spell has disadvantage on their saving throw against the spell.
Yep.
Ooh, neat.
That's huge. That's effectively increasing your success rate significantly.
Better than Bequan.
I got a question.
Yeah.
How does a D3 work?
A D6, 1, 2 is 1, 3, 4 is 2, 4, 5, 6 is 3.
I've always just subtracted 3 from me thinking about 3.
I never considered that. I just always gave it the range.
Math.
We here at Crit Academy are not pro math elites.
Which is sad, seeing how much math is in the game.
Right. I make it all up. So the other, there's actually quite a few different items on the Obelith loot table. The Obelith Hide. It can be crafted into a cloak of the manta ray, which is you can find in the DMG, and it tells you how much it costs for 200 gold pieces, and it takes 14 days. So now you've slayed this. She's basically giving you an item to craft a magical item, which I think is fantastic. And it's very specific. It's not just, what am I going to do with this? It tells you exactly what you can do with it, which is fantastic. You also get 4d6 Obelith teeth. It can be sold for 10 gold pieces per tooth. Honestly, I just like the idea of having an Obelith necklace. Just because it just, what are those? Those are Obelith teeth. You killed an Obelith? Of course.
For now.
And then you get bandits. They're like, that guy's wearing Obelith teeth. Let's gank his ass.
It also drops 1d4 Obelith tentacles, and those can be crafted into a magical whip with a +1 weapon bonus.
Giggity.
Well, so the thing I like about this is you're no longer just giving a magical whip to a player. It's literally a damn tentacle made out a whip made out of tentacles. You can even like put a collection of them together, like a 9-tail whip, and they just, you know, flip around when you use them, almost lifelike. That gives me the creeps. It gives me the free willies. So the last item on the Obelith loot table is 1d4 vials of Obelith mucus. When consumed, you must succeed a DC 14 constitution saving throw or be diseased for 1d4 hours. While diseased, you can breathe underwater.
Yeah.
So this monster has a very relatively large loot table, and I think that that's fantastic because it's not just one or two things that they get. And because they're all dice, hey, one little spark, welcome to the party. And because they're all not just one item, it's a little bit of a chance. Sometimes you'll walk away with a surprisingly large quantity of loot. So that was something that I really like. What did you guys think about how this loot table was put together by Anne?
Completely by hand.
What?
Completely by hand?
Well, I'm sure she used a computer.
I like the way it's been formatted.
Yeah, it's very quick and it's very concise and it's to the point and it fits great. Ian, what monster have you picked to fit our loot table?
Well, I picked a couple, actually, but...
We're going to start with one for now, and we'll go back and forth.
All right. I'm going to start with a simple one and go with the animated armor.
The animated armor. Why don't you tell us about the animated armor's loot table? Let's discuss something real quick. What would you expect to find on it first? Probably armor, right?
Yes and no.
Ooh. Let's hear it.
Scrap metal.
If you control F, you can just type it in. It goes quicker.
You're not wrong. Okay.
They're playing Gloomhaven and watching us. That's hilarious. I love it, you guys. 10 cool points.
I remember the one time we tried to play Gloomhaven.
What's Gloomhaven?
It's a board game.
It's a board game?
It's like 5 board games, though.
Yeah. Oh.
It's huge.
Well, it's also a living campaign. Mm-hmm. We actually level up characters as you play through it, and the game plays itself for the monsters. But we tried to play it here once when it... I'm like, okay, guys, I've been trying to set up this just the first mission for 45 minutes, and I'm still, like, not even half done.
Yeah, we didn't end up getting to play very much because we spent so much time with setup, so.
So, all right, why don't you... Monopoly with death.
No.
Yeah.
Well, Monopoly has death, the death of your relationships with your family. All right.
But anyway, like, with animated armor, you basically score one piece of broken plate armor, size medium, which makes sense, because they are ace of armor, but you break it when you kill them. And actually, in most games, most DMs I played didn't actually let me have the armor after we killed it, even with the broken condition, which at least could have fixed it.
Right, right.
And you also get, like, 1 ounce of arcane dust, which can be used as an additional material component when casting spells that deal damage. When using this way, you can choose to re-roll one of the roll damage dice and must give you a second result.
See, now I like this because, once again, you have a material component from a magical creature yep. that can be used to amplify existing magics.
I guess that means he encountered Scott Pilgrim's girlfriend's third ex.
What? I haven't watched that.
Really?
Yeah. I hear it's good.
Talk to the cleanling on Monday. What? Because you'll be dust by Monday.
Oh, God.
The cleanling? She cleans dust. She does.
So I like... This is really
Wait,
cool.
Wait, why Monday?
On a Monday?
Well... Today's Friday. It's just weekends off. So, Monday, right?
This is really cool because it actually allows you to potentially increase your damage, but it's so subtle that giving away multiple collections of it's not a big deal. Now, the only thing I noticed with this is it doesn't say if there's a limit on how much you can do per like spell. So, if you have... Let's say you have 6 ounces and you throw your... What is it? What? How many? Is it 66 fireball for fireball?
8d6.
8d6? So let's say you have 8 ounces of this. Can you expend these when you do your fireball and then just go through and re-roll several of them based on how much dice you did?
I would think, though, you would have to use it when you cast a spell, though.
Well, yeah, so, but still, would you allow that? I mean, I think I would. Well, I mean you're using a limited resource to buff a spell, potentially, but it doesn't guarantee it's buff. It could weaken it.
I guess you just turn to like a Skyrim, though. Yep, I have a 99... None of these arcane powders.
I'm going to dump them all into my fireball.
That I never use because I might need them...
Honestly, I think I probably would be okay if they said, okay, I'm using 8 of my arcane dust to enhance my fireball. So when I throw it, I can re-roll up to 8 dice. Now, what's cool is if you pick like a 2 or a 3, you might end up getting 1. So it doesn't necessarily guarantee you a higher damage, but it definitely will give you increased control over your damage dice, which I think is pretty sweet. What do you think, B?
I think it's a very powerful tool to be able to re-roll damage.
Mm-hmm. Which, go ahead, sorry, I didn't mean to
say, hey, it's one thing to be able to re-roll your attack rolls, but being able to re-roll damage, that's a big thing.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Well, there's some abilities that can let you do it to some degree anyway, some
yeah,
classes.
I think so. One of the sorcerer capstones can do that.
And, like, just great weapon fighter, at least, which allows you to re-roll ones and twos with heavy weapons. So.
So it's not unheard, but it's such a really cool way to, thing to get from a magical creature. Brandon, which creature did you pick?
Yeah, I chose 3 of my favorites, and the first one was the Basilisk.
Why don't you tell us about the Basilisk?
The Basilisk has one of 2 items you can get. It's 1d2 Basilisk Eyes. When consumed, you must succeed on a DC 12 Constitution saving throw or become petrified as you are turned to stone. You remain petrified until freed by the Greater Restoration spell or similar magic. It can also be used as an additional material component when casting the spell Flesh to Stone. When used this way, the target of the spell has disadvantage on their saving throw against the spell's effects.
So this is actually interesting because it gives us two effects, right? It gives us the amplify magic for the spell Flesh to Stone, which is already pretty cool because once again, you're imposing disadvantage on their save, which significantly boosts the chance of success. But why would you consume this eye in order to turn yourself to stone?
You wouldn't.
Ah, there it is.
Yeah.
But tossing that in some asshole dick nobleman's tea or salad. Oh, yeah. Well, what is this meat in my salad?
The meat salad, don't you know? New trend.
You could totally end an entire encounter with some dick because of this. Because a DC 12 for like commoners is not, that's not easy to hit.
You're just sitting there with a mortar and pestle, smashing it together, putting it in his drinks like, my fucking taxes, piece of shit.
I think this is a great tool for wanting to deal with somebody outside of a combat format, which I think is fantastic. What else you got there, B?
You can also get one vial of basilisk blood. If poured on a medium or smaller creature that has been petrified by being turned to stone, they are cured of the petrified condition. So if you do decide to consume the eye and you fuck that up, your teammates, if they're nice enough, can take the vial of blood, pour it on you, and you become unpetrified.
Yeah, this is really cool too because not every group is going to have a caster that can cast spells such as Greater Restoration. So I like that she included that as a guaranteed drop.
In other words, this is a good supplement overall, though, for fans of either Monster Hunter or The Witcher.
Absolutely. So one of the ones I picked that I thought was just really fantastic was the Intellect Devourer. So if you don't know what the Intellect Devourer is, shame on you, first of all. Secondly, it's basically a brain with like legs and it like, you know, scampers up towards you and then tries to jump into your mouth and into your brain or some shit like that. Which is pretty fantastic. So now that you've got this mind controlling little creature, what happens when you manage to successfully slay this crazy thing? Bitch, by the way, are fun as hell to have in an encounter. Send like 10 of these after your players and watch them run. So the first item on the loot table is 1d4 Intellect Devourer Brain Chunks. Ooh, that sounds like a good soup. When consumed, you can sense the presence and location of any creature within 300 feet of you that has an intelligence of 3 or higher, regardless of imposing barriers. Unless the creature is protected by the Mind Blank spell, this effect lasts for 10 minutes. I think this is dope as hell.
Side note, I'm actually still surprised my original barbarian character didn't have that as a feature.
Jeez. I like this because this kind of gives us some sense of how the Intellect Devourer hunts. It doesn't need to see you because it doesn't have eyes. It just can sense a disturbance in the force, so to speak, and track you down as long as you're not incompetent. So I'm pretty sure most of my barbarians probably would not show up. Well, I guess technically their stats are a little high, but I feel like they wouldn't. And the fact that it only lasts 10 minutes means you probably wouldn't get too much use out of getting a couple of them. But this is a really great way to shorten up a dungeon, I think. Like, if you know exactly where things are that you want, you can easily pop one of these in and get direct line of they're that direction. Kind of like the Paladin's Divine Sense, right?
Yep.
So, what do you guys think?
The way I see this specific thing, you get 1d4.
Yeah, talking to your mic, bro.
1d4. I'm talking into my mic, bro.
You're trying to read off my shit. We'll move it this way a little bit.
Holy, why don't you eat my ass? I remember we were doing, I'm pretty sure it was in a campaign. It might have been a one-shot, but we were supposed to raid this stronghold, but we didn't know when the guard shift was ending and where things were going. I think this would be perfect for a rogue, someone who can get in, figure out where everyone's at, where they're going to be at every time, come back and tell their party, this is where they're going to be at, let's go. They can completely avoid guards at the entire time.
So it can trivialize an infiltration encounter.
Yes.
I think that's fantastic. Because, once again, it's another resource that the players can expend to help overcome a challenge the DM has plopped, especially as the DM, if you know they have this and you plan for it ahead of time, which I think is fantastic. So this is really cool. I like also that it can help avoid you getting ganked and jumped. Nobody can surprise you when you know they're there. You know what I mean? So another item on the Intellect Devourer's loot table is 1d2 vials of Intellect Devourer blood. Now, think about that for a second. They're pretty much just brain, so that's brain juice. When consumed, your intelligence score increases by 1d4 to a maximum of 20 for an hour. Oh my god, I love this idea.
For an hour?
Yeah, you got the dumb barbarian who everyone just is always inconvenient. He takes one of these bad boys, probably by accident, and then says, he goes rah, rah, to... yes, good sir. I think that the solution to our problem is clearly, you know, and starts just rambling on about his genius now at this point.
Wouldn't that jack up the strength and power of magic caster spells?
Yep.
It would boost him, yes.
For wizards.
That use that intelligence, which is mostly just wizards. I think it is only wizards, to my understanding.
Yep.
So I think this is really cool, because I think this is the first one we've seen that actually increases a stat, even though it's a temporary buff. And there's one thing we've talked about before on the show. Some of the best loot you can give is boons and buffs to your party, to your players, that they can enjoy and savor for a little while before it disappears. Because you can accidentally give too many magical items and make them overpower, but if they're overpowered for... at this time, it says 1 hour. That's not a big deal, and it's not going to affect your game in the long run. Yeah. So that's why I really picked this one, and I thought it was really cool. And plus, the idea of intellect devourer stew was just too much to pass up.
Unless the wizard saves these vials for the big bad.
That's true.
It's like, oh, I don't need to be overpowered during the entire game. I just need to be overpowered for this one specific fight.
This is like the intellect devourer steroid, man. Like, instead of shooting up to get big and buff, your brain like goes, it starts spewing out your ears.
Why am I picturing from before you encounter our boss, this player's doing what the main character Overlord did before he fought a powerful enemy.
Mm-hmm. I like Overlord. It's a great show.
Spent 90 seconds just casting buff spells on himself before going to combat.
It would be even worse if you were the DM and you wanted to be a complete asshole. It's like, all right, I got all these vials. He drinks them. He gets all big and beef. It's like, let's go. You enter the chamber. He's not there.
The boss?
Yeah, the boss isn't there.
He consumed all of his bombing powder.
Or it's already dead.
Oh, that would be so douchey as a DM to do.
You should have waited. Should have seen if he was even still alive.
Oh my god, that's hilarious and dicky.
To be fair, I had that planned before you walked in there, so...
Yeah,
it's on my notes, you asshole.
And not how it's in the middle of my notes, not at the end.
Right.
Why is everything written in pen, but that's written in pencil?
Bastard. All right, I think that'll do it for the Intellect Devourer. Ian, what's another one you picked?
Well, another one I definitely picked was the Shadow Demon.
Why don't you tell us about what is a Shadow Demon?
A demon, a shadow.
It's terrifying.
Thanks for clearing that up, asshole.
I have a stat block over there. I was going to use him instead of the race.
I mean, it's literally in the name. What do you want from me?
Whatever.
All right, Shadow Demon. You get 1d4 Shadow Demon claws, which you can craft into a 100 gold piece dagger after 7 days. And these daggers deal an additional 1d4 psychic damage on a hit.
Ooh, I like that. So you're basically, it gives you another tool to craft magical items. This one inflicts extra damage and psychic no less, which I think is pretty cool. I assume the Shadow Demon uses a lot of psychic powers.
It's been a while. And you also
That's exactly what it sounds like, but I don't know what it is.
Dick. And you also get 1d2 vials of demon ichor. When consumed, you gain resistance to poison for an hour.
Ooh, I like that. That's really cool. So this one gives you a temporary buff. Oh, that's a dope-ass picture.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. Mm-hmm. The only actions they have are their claw attacks.
Is it psychic-based?
But a demon, chaotic cable.
It is. I can see psychic from here.
Yeah.
Interactions.
Incorporeal movements, slight sensitivity, and shadow stealth.
So this is really cool because it gives you resistance to poison. So once again, a tool that the players can use in advance. We have not been super great, Kepler, since you've been deployed. First of all, thank you for your service. Because of people like you, I can sit and be stupid every day. So thank you very much for fighting for us. We appreciate it. So what?
What's that say about me?
What? I appreciate you in the military.
Yeah, but now I'm out, so I guess I'm just stupid.
I plead the fifth. which Kepler and you both have fought to, for me to be able to do, so thank you. Anyways, so I like this one because it gives another resource for the players to include in any actions or plans of attack against an enemy. Now, for me, if my players ran into this and I knew they had that, I would make it a point to include a monster that they could utilize... so that they could utilize that resource they've gathered, whether it's the psychic dagger if they're interested. I think that or the poison, because, you know, how awesome is a player going to feel if they get to down this and they're fighting a big monster that poisons everyone? You know what I mean? It's going to make them feel like a damn hero.
Actually, I told you I should have looted that asshole.
Actually, I had a question about all the items that these monsters are dropping.
Yes.
Did she include, like, a table that determines if they get all the items on that list or if a certain number of items on that list?
I imagine it's up to the DM. To my understanding, it's harvesting, right? So they got to spend time harvesting. And it's not so much a drop, but they're harvesting it, right?
Right.
So it's not so much, you know, it's not dropping off the monster. You have to go and rip the claws off the creature. You have to go in and siphon off its vials of demon ichor, you know? So... Brandon, what's another one you picked?
The Harpy.
Why don't you tell us about the Harpy?
The Harpy has three different items you can get. First one is one broken club. I don't know why that would drop on a Harpy.
Have you used clubs?
Is that on their stat block? Probably. Oh, I see what you did there. It took a second. They do like to sing. I just totally envisioned. Do you ever watch that old Power Rangers movie with the flying Tengu warriors? They're going, ah, 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 and they start singing and dancing.
Oh my god. The other is 1d6 rations.
Harpy.
Which is funny because it's
the other white meat. Alicia says, I hate harpies in WoW. Yeah, they kill a lot of people. Bastards.
And they're fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
One set of harpy vocal cords. I like this one. Mm-hmm. Once per day, you can blow into these vocal cords as an action and sound out a magical melody. Each creature within 150 feet of you that can hear that melody must succeed on a DC 11 wisdom saving throw or become charmed by you until the melody ends. You can use a bonus action on your subsequent turns to continue blowing into the vocal cords, but you cannot do so for longer than 1 minute.
Dude, it's a harpy ocarina.
No. When I read this, the way I see it is if you're surrounded by a whole shitload of enemies,
mm-hmm.
and you blow into this thing and they all fail, your entire party has 1 minute to leave. And by the time you stop blowing that cord, they're going to snap out of it, look around, and you're not going to be there.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. That's awesome. So this is a really good one because you're basically cutting out their vocal cords and using it as an instrument. This is something totally a bard would do. That voice sounds great. I want it. To add it to my instrument collection.
Makes me think of the raptors. I forget what they called it. Some canal that they blow into in the third movie, and they sound like a velociraptor.
Oh, that's yeah, what yeah. Me of. Yeah, kind of.
3D printed
thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's very cool. What do you think about this, Ian?
Fun stuff.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy it.
or he could blow into the vocal cords and push an enemy off the cliff and then stop. So that when they step out of there, go, what the fuck is good? Ah!
That's funny.
No!
Oh, gosh. There it is. So one of the other ones I picked is something that at first seems kind of mundane. It's the Hill Giant. Now, would you agree that's kind of a mundane monster, something you guys fight all the time?
Not when I look at the item list.
Well, yeah, right. So the Hill Giant, while relatively mundane, has a very cool loot table. The first one is you get 1D, 2 eyes. Now, I laughed at this when I first saw it because you can get one. Well, what had happened to the other one? Did you guys accidentally cut it?
Or you damaged it and extract it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
I like
you roll behind the screen and say, you manage to get one eye out, but when you try to get the second one out, it pops.
Squeeze the jelly from your eyes.
It's actually quite good on toast.
So when consumed, you become proficient in the wisdom. This is an interesting mechanic. You're not increasing a stat per se, but you're now allowed to add your proficiency bonus. So when you guys are investigating or something like that, you can always give this to the person who's not super great at it. What I think is really interesting, you guys ever watch the Hercules and you got the Fates who are all sharing the one eye?
Yep.
That's what I kind of envision when you got three players who aren't proficient. They're all like arguing over it and it starts rolling around and they're chasing it. Always seemed fun to me, but I think that's a really interesting one. It's a very small buff, but it can warrant quite a unique tool to use during your games. You get 1d10 giant toes. They can be sold for gold, 4 gold a piece. Damn, those things must be delicious or something, because 4 gold a piece is a lot for a toe.
Well, if it's toe stool, like oh my god.
Oh, what is that delicious and succulent smell? Ooh, is that beef? No, that's toe.
Giant toe.
It's toe soup. I made the spoon out of toenail.
Oh god, that's nasty.
But no, if it's anything like Skyrim, giant toe is a component for like making potions and stuff.
Ah, well, it's funny you mention that, because you can get one giant heart. I was wondering if you were going to make the thudding noise. It says the hill giant's heart can be crafted into a potion of hill giant strength on the DMG for 100 gold in 2 days. This is fantastic. Once again, we're tying a feature of the hill giant to a crafted potion. So now here's the real question. Are all hill giant strength potions made from a heart of a hill giant?
That's kind of disturbing.
Isn't it? Like, basically, you're drinking the blood to become stronger. That is very cannibalistic for our heroes.
Yeah. The wizard says, what if you're allergic to the harvested item?
Then you get the squirts. I am super strong right after I get off the toilet.
you go into the outhouse and it just explodes.
I was going to say, you go to reach for toilet paper and your hand just goes through the entire wall.
He's like, damn it. you grab a nearby sheep.
And it's brown and black when you toss it back.
With a little bit of red.
Oh my gosh. That's so gross.
Great. Okay. Great. Another thing about the, what's that one, razor company?
Schick?
No.
Is there more than one?
Tastes like schick. Harry's, Shave Dollar Club, Gillette.
Yeah. Oh,
Gillette.
Yeah, Dollar Club. I remember one of their online commercials when they were at their butt wipes. And in the background, you see a bear sitting on a log. Grabs a white rabbit. You think it behind? Something down. It's not a brown rabbit.
Oh, God. All right. So the last thing on this list is the
Dollar Shave Club.
The one tribal amulet. There is a 10% chance that the amulet is an amulet of proof against detection and location, DMG, and a 90% chance that it's a non-magical tribal amulet. So this is the first one we've seen that actually potentially has a magic item, but might not be. And it's a very small chance. You could kill frickin' 10 of these guys before you get one of these magical amulets. So I like that, because it's not just giving you an outright magical item.
Wow, that's straight from WoW.
Yeah. Success rate. Oh, man.
I watched a lore video the other day on giants, and they point out that currently in regular lore in Forgotten Realms, there's only 500 left of each type of giant.
Really? That's interesting and rad. So,
how many giants have we killed in the Horde? In the Stormstorm King's Thunder?
So, the last thing we're going to talk about is the most iconic monster in Dungeons & Dragons. And which do you think that is, Brandon?
A dragon?
I hope so. Dear God, if you'd have got that wrong, me and you'd be having some fights. So she
I was
going
to say goblin.
You bastard. She does have a loot table for every single monster. For the sake of it's the first one that showed up, we're going to talk about the ancient black dragon. And these loot tables are quite extensive.
Especially given by dragon's age.
Yeah, so So each of us will talk about one of the items instead of me just reading through all of it. I'll go first, then
Which dragon are we looking at?
Ancient black dragon. I got it here, so you can just look off my screen. So when you manage to conquer one of the mightiest of dragons, the ancient black dragon, you get you can harvest one ancient black dragon acid gland. As an action, you can throw this gland up to 30 feet away where it will explode in a burst of acid. Each creature within 10 feet where the gland landed must succeed a DC 22 dexterity saving throw, taking 66 damage. 66 acid damage on a failed save and half as much on a successful one. The gland is fragile and will burst 3d6 hours after being harvested, regardless if it's used or not. So Ooh. This is really cool. This is a magic item with a timer on it. What if it blows up in your pack?
It's a grenade.
Dude, like, can you imagine just sitting around, you're all sitting around eating your soup at your fire, and then poof, you all get assaulted, your face is melted. I think that's fantastic.
My wife keep us in for a bag of holding for this.
I think that is really cool. Ian, do you want to tell us about the next item on the loot table?
10d6 black dragon claws can be crafted into a dagger, and on a hit, you can deal an additional 1d6 acid damage with this weapon.
Okay, so this is really cool. So it's another item that can be crafted. This one, instead of psychic damage like the previous one, is acid damage. But it is 1d6 is significantly higher for a dagger weapon, and it's 2d6. It'd be impressive if a dragon had 10d6 toes.
Yep.
Or claws. Brandon, what's the next one?
You get 1d2 black dragon fangs. Can be crafted into a short sword, 150 gold pieces at 9 days. On a hit, you deal an additional 1d6 with this weapon.
I'm starting to see a pattern.
Well, the poison base.
No, acid.
Ah.
Right. But so that's actually a trend through all of the dragons, right?
Yep.
As you loot them, you get the pertinent elemental effect or whatever, which is pretty cool. Wizard says, fail to harvest the acid, melt to death. So once again, he actually makes a great point. She does talk about, you know, what happens during success and failure, and you as a DM have a lot of leeway there. I love the idea of them trying to harvest this ancient dragon acid gland, but what happens if they fail? They do a crappy check, poof, it explodes in your face.
Ah!
So definitely take those into consideration, because it's a risk versus reward thing, right? The next one they have is one black dragon hide can be crafted into a set of light armor for 2,000 gold in 60 days. While wearing the armor, you have resistance to acid damage. Three sets of armor can be crafted from this hide.
Makes me think of that old meme of it's just like a Smaug from The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
My armor is iron. Shows like a dude in like a dragon plate from Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. My armor is your mother.
So this one's really cool because it's not just one item. You can potentially craft up to three pieces of armor. Now, in most cases, acid resistance probably isn't super huge. But if the players have the information they need, they know they're going to be fighting something that spews acid, you could potentially outfit half your group or all your group with this resistance effect to increase your chance of success.
Or you hunt creatures frequently that do acid damage, like in swamps.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one. Ian, do you want to tell us what the next item on the table is?
1d2 black dragon lung tissue. When consumed, you become amphibious for 8 hours.
That's true. So that's a really cool one because it gives you the ability to breathe. And you only get a couple of them, so not everyone can breathe. So you hope you got a wizard that can help everyone breathe underwater. So Wizard Cadius actually asks, the hide is so strong, how do you cut it? For harvesting.
Carefully.
And Ian clearly put carefully.
Oh, he did.
So, harvesting is a powerful technique, not just in, you know, the fantasy world, but in reality. We always find ways to break and shape and craft things that are supposed to be impossibly hard, right?
Yeah, and speaking as a guy who has got a dear old deer hunting, you have to be careful sometimes, even just for mundane creatures like that.
Yeah.
You don't want to pierce any of the intestines.
Shit go everywhere?
The smell.
It smells horrifying.
Oh, I didn't even tell you guys about my day camping when we were leaving. Remind me to tell you after the show, or I'll share it with everyone who's still watching, but I'm not going to do it during the show.
Yeah, like in real life, there's some things that can be easier or harder. For example, cleaning a rabbit is significantly easier than cleaning a squirrel.
Well, yeah, it's bigger.
It's not that it's bigger. It's a rabbit hide is very, very thin. It's like tissue paper. If you grab rabbit, hold it up, yank down, you're going to rip its flesh. It's not very strong at all. Whereas a squirrel, the moment they die, they go into rigor mortis really quick, so it's very hard to skin them.
Oh, jeez. Okay. I guess that does fit the topic today. Brandon, sorry. You want to tell us about the next item?
Sorry, Alicia, you didn't need to hear that.
Alicia wants to know if it's going to be a patron video. Wizard Cadius, I would say if the idea is your character is a specialist, but if they're not, yeah, you can make them go to somebody that's a specialist. But the idea of something so hard it can't be harvested is kind of ridiculous, because you probably could use material from the dragon that can cut through its own stuff.
And I could also see like some classes just being good at this in general, like rangers, for example.
Oh, absolutely. Brandon, you want to take that next one up here? Yes.
You get 2d12 black dragon teeth. Nope. One tooth can be used as the tip of an arrow or a crossbow bolt. Ranged attacks that use ammunition made from these teeth deal an additional 1d6 acid damage on a hit. After the ammunition has been fired, it loses this property.
So this is really cool. This enhances magical effects, or ranged effects. I think it'd be awesome to have a sling that you throws this shit. Then you get that whole new term on David versus Goliath going on when you hit him with an exploding acid shell. So this is pretty cool. Once again, it's a different style of magic item. It's not a magic item per se, but something that has a single use and is one and done. I'm a big fan of these because you can add them and not worry about imbalancing your game. So the last item on this list is 1d2 black dragon wings. One wing can be crafted into a resistance cloak for 1,000 GP in 30 days. It requires attunement, and when worn, you have resistant to acid damage. That is dope.
Can you also craft this in the Red Bull?
Because it gives you wings?
Yep.
Oh, God.
My God.
And I lied. That's not the last thing on the list. The last thing on the list is the 10d6 rations.
And let's face it, that would explain the taste of Red Bull.
Oh, God. I'll be honest, it is imbalanced. I was right.
It tastes like acid.
I'll be honest, exactly. I'm surprised there's not something that like allows you to breathe fire or something.
Well,
maybe that's a fire dragon.
It's an acid dragon. Well,
they breathe acid though, don't they?
Yeah.
Like on a gland. Well, I guess that's what the gland is. You're basically throwing and doing the same effect. I got it. Alrighty.
You know what I don't understand about that? Hmm. Is it's, what did it say it was? 1,000 gold pieces and 30 days to create.
Mm-hmm.
30 days, I can understand, but I've made my own cloak before, just with fabric and a sewing machine, or even doing it by hand. How on earth is it going to cost 1,000 gold to make a cloak out of a dragon wing?
Tried to make one out of a dragon wing before?
Well, I gotta find a dragon first.
Well, it's probably also takes into account the other specialized tools and material components made to do it.
Right. Every stitch, you break your needle?
Well, maybe. Or maybe it just takes a lot of working to get it soft enough to be a cloak. I mean, who knows? I'm not trying to think of the science of this shit. Are you nuts? We're talking about a goddamn dragon.
Science and D&D.
They don't mix.
No.
Overall, what are your guys' thoughts on this product? Is this something you would use in your games?
Yes, it is. Actually, I might use this for the campaign.
I would agree. Because
people keep asking for, hey, what do I get?
Yeah, I'm already planning on incorporating it in the next campaign I run. So, gotta tan that hide. Anyways, I think this is a great product. Anne did a phenomenal job. And like I said, she's made two other ones for each of the different books. I'll go ahead and toss it in the link in chat again.
Yep.
As well as it is, the featured product is on our panels down below for till our next episode.
And I do at least like that, at least taking some crafting time into account, just because I think per raw, some of the numbers are kind of shot.
Yeah, I would agree.
Like how it takes you an entire year, for example, per raw to basically craft plate mail. It does not take a year to craft plate mail.
I've never crafted plate mail, so I don't know. But
you get the point.
Yeah, I do. So overall, I think this is an amazing product. You guys should check it out. Anne did a really great job. So if you do pick it up and you like it, make sure to leave her a review. And tell them you got it from us or saw our show or some stuff like that.
Yep.
I think that'll do it for our main topic today. Before we close out, we want to give away another piece of fat loot, compliments of Loresmith.
Each episode, we will draw another lucky subscriber's name, and they will win the best-selling adventure, The Claws of Madness, Compliments of Lawsmith. Lawsmith is a small indie team of creative artists who remember exploring the realms together with friends, finding incredible places, and meeting colorful characters along the way. They set out to deliver an experience that sparks those lasting impressions that pushed them to create their first standalone adventure, The Claws of Madness. This best-selling adventure is one that you don't want to miss.
I'm about to unleash some Claws of Madness.
Oh, God. Who's our winner today, Ian?
Our winner today is Twitter follower CB at Clan XD&D.
Congratulations, Twitter follower CB at Clan XD&D. If you enjoy the adventure, please let Glorsmith know.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
I'm really excited about our character concept today. So, I told you earlier, Alicia played D&D with us this weekend, and...
Oh my god.
You're not going to believe what character she brought. She brought a half-orc named Shrek. She took the Find Familiar feat, so she could have Donkey. And, so she very much was great in the roleplay aspect. This was a fun character. It was fun watching her talk to herself back and forth as Donkey and as Shrek. And when she was fighting some gnolls, and so her weapon was a giant horn, and she was just beating them with it like a maul. And she brought one of the monsters down to one hit point. She's like... can Donkey hurt him? I was like, well, technically he can only do grand advantage and stuff like that. I was like, but you know what? We like to run a rule called kick him in the dick if they got one hit point. So she used Donkey to do like a rear end, you know how they kick backwards? I don't know what that's called.
A donkey kick.
Yeah, there you go. And it kicks him right in the dick with his donkey kick. And literally...
he keeps kicking me in the dick.
So her ass literally kicked some ass. It was pretty great. And she did really donkey. Really, really great. She had a lot of energy going. She's like, we going to make waffles. We going to make some waffles today. You know, she had the whole thing going on. And really, the character was just Shrek. And it fits so well with the character concept. Her character was all about invading personal space and not being able to understand normal cultural shit. What am I looking for? There's a word for it.
Conventions?
Yeah. Culture, normal human conventions.
With socially acceptable.
Yeah. So,
not.
Yes.
That's called Asperger's.
Yes. Yeah, they were all investigating a corpse that was dead on the ground. And she just like, well, let's go grab it and we'll go look at it closer. And she picks it up and just walks away with the corpse. And the whole town is just aghast. They're like, oh my God. She just walked away with it. You know, they just showed up and just taken her. So I think it was great. What do you guys think of a character, an orc name that has the Shrek theme in the donkey threat? Would you run something like that?
I was actually kind of surprised that it took us this long for that to come up.
Yeah.
So.
I personally would not, but I can definitely see how a lot of new players would, especially if it helps them ease into the game itself.
And honestly, that was one of the things, is it was a persona she already understood, yep. And she could play out. And I think that is really good for new players. I think that I see all too often people in those groups of D&D, 5th edition group and all that stuff say, hey, I don't let my players play characters from books or anime or comic books. What are you doing?
He's holding your fist over your head.
I'm trying to get a fist bump.
Did I miss a joke?
No.
Y'all are fucking weird.
This is news?
Whatever. I think it's a great way, having a character concept that is something you're familiar with is a good way to familiarize yourself and take the... What is fucking wrong with you?
Many thanks, but we've known this.
Whatever. Do you guys have anything else to add to this?
No.
Dicks?
Yeah. I kind of laugh at...
Social expectation. That's it.
I kind of left me to say I don't want characters from anime, video games, so on and so forth.
There's a lot of people that say that. I don't.
I know. And I remember this one time in particular where a guy basically went on a huge rant, like, no video game characters, no anime characters, no D&D characters in, like, a superhero RPG. And me and the group, couple friends, like, opened some comic books going, okay, let's see here.
look at some very unknown.
No, it's like, look at all these parallels. I'm going to play a robot that can capture the moves of enemies. I said no video game characters. That's Mega Man. Actually, it's Amazo from DC Comics. And we came up with a whole list of why that whole comment was stupid.
Wizard Cadius makes a great point. We're playing a fake game. Everything goes.
Right.
I agree. Yeah. I think that'll do it for our character concept. A half-orc named Shrek with the fine familiar feet. For his donkey. Donkey, kick him in the dick.
Why? Why does it keep kicking me in the dick?
Our monster variant of the week is the Legion Devil Grunt. So, to celebrate the upcoming Descent into Avernus, we're going to be doing a special collection of devil and demon variants for a bit. That way you're well prepared for its release.
and you have spare creatures to throw in to mix things up a little bit.
Right, right. The armies of the Nine Hells are largely made up of Legion Devils, cruel, pitless warriors that gather in countless numbers from the scorched plains of Avernus to the deepest chasms of Nessus. Brutally disciplined Legion Devils haven't the slightest regard for their own existence and live to crush their master's foes beneath their iron-shod heels. That sounds freaking awesome, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I forget. Okay, so Alicia's giving me a hard time. She's mentioning that you didn't mention that we ate parfaits while the others fought. Yeah, so after she clobbered the two gnolls, she just went in her tent and went in the cart and
Donkey
ate parfaits. Woo-hoo, we gonna get some parfaits. And some waffles. So the origin of this stat block you're gonna use is the goblin boss. The biggest loss feature you're gonna get is the redirect attack. So the new features you're going to give it are Fiend, Dark Vision, you know, damage resistance to cold, bludgeoning, piercing, slashing, non-magical weapons that aren't silvered, and damage immunities will be fire and poison, condition immunities, poison. So the new core features for its combat are going to be innate spellcasting, and it'll use intelligence for that, and you're going to give it once a day the Misty Step feature. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. Squad defense. When a creature the grunt can see attacks an ally within 5 feet of it, the grunt can use its reaction to impose disadvantage on that attack roll. So this makes these things very, very tough.
That puts as a reaction?
What? Yes.
Wouldn't that put a disadvantage at every attack?
You can only use one reaction per turn.
Oh, okay.
Or per round, right? Once per round.
Yeah, one per round. Yep.
So it definitely, it's still very powerful. It's basically the protection fighter style.
Yep.
And these guys are designed to clump together. Now, I know wizards love that, and that's generally a bad thing, but they're designed to overwhelm their enemies, and this is a good way to do it. What makes it more interesting is they can Misty Step to potential targets of the players and then guard them. What do you guys think about this?
Fun stuff.
It sounds difficult.
And obnoxious. I love it.
Yeah, it very much probably will be.
The players would have to focus fire on him to even get a...
No, they would all have this. It's a squad defense. You would have a squad of them with this ability. Like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 enemies all have this, imposing your disadvantage on your attacks.
Be prepared.
Be prepared. Now, there is a way around this, and we've talked about it as a player tip before. Go for the nads. Non-armor class defenses. You know, use saves and stuff like that to beat them, right? Because it's only attack rolls, so if you don't use an ability with an attack roll, it's not effective. So it's not like that would be their weakness in the way you would have to get around them, but it's going to be the equivalent of fighting a group of very high AC monsters.
I am seriously looking forward to Avernus when that comes out.
Oh, me too. Yeah, that's the one we're going to run. So
I can definitely see different classes in general just having different reactions when they end up there. Because I can think of like rogues, fighters, what's the like, oh crap, we're here in hell, we need to get out. Paladins, I am now in a target-rich environment.
But I'm really excited for that, and so we're going to be doing quite a few of these, so keep an eye out. I hope you guys like that. It is the Legion Devil Grunt.
When does Avernus drop?
In November, I think. Something like that. We'll find out. Ian, would you want to do our encounter of the podcast as soon as you tell us? September.
September 17th.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to start it until yours is done. So
yeah.
You can take as long as you want on that because I'm having fun.
Encounter. False leader. Characters come to a secluded city. The city has kept all foreigners from trading or spreading false faiths. The leader of the city is said to have power of the gods, like if they're a paladin, for example, or cleric, and claims to be a champion for the deity. He is using this knowledge to keep the city under control.
What do you guys think of this?
Guy in charge, imposing his convictions onto the masses.
Yeah. So I was watching, have you guys seen the Maggie series?
Yep.
There's a prequel involving Sinbad.
Yep.
And one
most
of the
OP character ever.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. He's so broken. He's definitely using hacks.
Especially in the first series.
Yeah. It's really good. But anyways, he ends up coming to this area in the mountains that's, you know, landlocked. It's mountain locked, right? They can't go anywhere, and they basically have locked it down, and he is a righteous fighter of God, and everything he says, his will be done sort of thing. Now, he is protecting, he believes he's protecting people, so he's not, like, evil.
Yeah.
But he's doing everything in his power to keep them following his faith and believing that he's their only hope for salvation and blah, blah, blah. In reality, he just is basically got a magical item that helps him and gives him this power. In this case, you can make it a paladin. This is interesting because you as a DM can be sending him through this as either a pass point, a passing area in the middle of ice cold mountains where they're just looking for shelter for a couple nights to escape the temperature, but they won't be let in. Or if they do, there's very strict, strict rules and punishments if they break those sorts of rules. And then they might lead them into realizing this guy's not who he says he is. And do the party now has to argue whether is it worth telling them that they're following a false god, or do we leave them as is following this guy who's clearly misleading them, but maybe not for malicious reasons? What do you guys think?
There's definitely some interesting role-playing opportunities from this.
Yeah. What do you think, B?
It makes me think of the priest from Full Metal Alchemist.
Oh, yeah. The first episode?
Yeah.
I don't remember. The Leet guy, or what? What's the name of the stupid god?
The
Leto?
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. He was using a false sorcerer stone to perform miracles.
Right, right. And he was keeping everyone...
Yeah.
Like, they were secluded enough that he could just spread those lies. It's very much like that. Same theory and same kind of style. Would you like something like this?
Yes. On the other hand, I mean, how could you expose someone like that?
You would have to prove they're false. Like, in your, going back to your Full Metal Alchemist thing, they used magical thing to broadcast his real words to everyone. So you could unmask him, but would that make it better or worse going off of your Full Metal Alchemist? Did that make it better or worse?
Which series are we talking?
I think it depends on what the leader is doing with the citizens.
Right.
If it's a good economy and a good neighborhood, everyone's like, cheerio, how you doing? Type of thing. It's like, man, I wouldn't mess with it.
Well, you got to remember, in the Full Metal Alchemist, I assume, I don't remember the difference between the two, but he's doing good, right? They all believe he's doing good, but he himself is not. In the example that we're using here, the false leader, he's not necessarily a bad guy. He just doesn't trust anybody and wants to protect everyone. So you could go both ways, I think.
And now for today's services, we shall offer our prayers to the Dragon Reborn. Wait, you mean the main character from the Wheel of Time series? What?
Nope.
you lie. No, I have the novel right here.
That's cool. Wizard Cadia says, Fanatic Paladin took your advice on a good necromancer, called him Soul Guard. That's awesome. I think that'll do it for this. This was a pretty simple idea, but I think it can create quite a bit of interaction between the players and what is right versus what is
wrong.
Well, no, it's not as simple as right and wrong, right? You know he's lying, but is he doing it for the right reasons? Does that make him right, or does that still make him bad? It's definitely interesting, and my brain's starting to hurt thinking about it.
Yeah, my head hurts.
Actually, I've been pouring over like a Warhammer 40k lore these past couple weeks,
mm-hmm.
and when I read the overview yesterday for the Tau, it turns out it's like a caste system, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and the race itself was able to advance very quickly because they have an overall philosophy of the greater good. But when you pour into the lore, it's like, wait a second, this one ruling caste that's in control seems to be kind of like a nudging the rest of the race with a compulsion to keep them in line.
Oh, no.
So I was like, okay, they're being dicks, but at the same time, look at what they're doing in society. So
that's a tough one. I like that. I think that'll do it for our encounter of the podcast, The False Leader. Brandon, would you like to tell us about our magic item?
This week's magic item is Alchemist's Frost. It is a rare potion. Alchemist's Frost is sealed in a... Alchemist... Damn it, Leah.
That bitch.
Alchemist's Frost is sealed in an insulated blue ceramic flask. When the flask contents are exposed to air, it explodes in an icy blue and white haze, covering the target in a numbing cold fog. As an action, you can throw this flask up to 20 feet, shattering it on impact. Make a ranged attack against a creature or object, treating the Alchemist Frost as an improvised weapon, unless placed into a sling. On a hit, the target takes 4 cold damage. If the target is a creature, they must succeed on a DC 13 Constitution saving throw, or have its movement reduced by half for 1 minute. A creature can repeat the saving throw at the end of its turns. The area of impact covers a 10-foot square area. When a creature moves into the Alchemist Frost area for the first time on its turn, or starts its turn there, must succeed on a DC 10 Dexterity Acrobatics check, or fall prone, because it's icy and get slippery.
It? Yeah, slippery when wet.
Yep.
You get to be a real-life Sub-Zero.
That's funny. You know. What do you guys think about this?
It definitely does a good thing of, like, makes things more difficult for the enemy and does some damage to them. Always a plus in my book, and it's a temporary item because it's one-time use, so...
Yep.
Go ahead. Okay. I was going to say, I like the idea of elemental grenades.
Well, I've got more coming, so
like,
keep an eye out.
Ice, fire, acid, all of it. It just seems so much fun.
Yeah, I'm going to be bringing more to the table. I like this for a couple different reasons. Sure, it does a little bit of damage, but it's not meant to be a damaging item. It slows their effect, so it's designed to be an inconvenience item. Additionally, it affects the ground, creating a new terrain hazard that you can use in combat to your advantage or to your disadvantage if you're not paying attention to where you're going. Putting, like, blowing this up in like a sweet spot that's like a funneled area where everyone has to come out of and they have to make a save in order to get to you is pretty interesting, and it'll stick around for a while. So
yeah, if you're being chased down an alley, this would be great.
It does occur to me that I didn't actually put a limit on how long that should last. I probably should fix that.
Pocket sand.
I'm gonna add that for 1 minute. There we go. All right. Yeah, this is a pretty good utility. Once again, single item, one-time use. Be clever with it, which players usually aren't. That'll do it for our magic item, the Alchemist Frost. Our Dungeon Master tip comes from Inner Party Conflict, yeah. The Guardian Rooms. I was listening to their podcast. This wasn't actually a submission. It was just I was listening to them, and I was like, oh, my God, that's an awesome idea. It's going into the show. So big guardians with powerful treasure, but... not necessarily needed to required to complete a dungeon or an adventure. Instead, it can be used as an incentive to return to an area at a later date once they've either grown strong enough to overcome the guardian or have acquired a special item to do so. This is really interesting because we always go through dungeons and we always think, oh, I can get through there, or, oh, there's something behind here, I gotta do it. But if you've got a big, giant, you know, construct that's just not gonna let you pass, and... the players will do everything they can to try to get past it anyway, but if you make it something super appealing and something they want, eventually they'll come back again and try to conquer it. What do you guys think about that?
I attacked the guardian. He rolls, he hits you, you're now unconscious. Did he crit? Nope. We're leaving.
Problem is, it would take more than one person going unconscious to decide they're leaving, unfortunately. But it's a good idea to have obstacles that aren't really required for them to do whatever their goal is.
Like that one webcomic I posted on our page the other day.
Yeah.
I was going to say that this is one of my favorite video game types. It's I think they called it the Metroid type. Shantae follows that same type where you come across an area... and you see a chest on the other side of it. It's like, oh, I need to get that chest. And you realize you can't get to it until you find an item later on in the game. Then you can come back
to it
and get it.
Happens a lot in Castlevania, too.
Yeah, yep. Castlevania's another one.
That's why it's called Metroidvania.
Right. So I think that's funny. I didn't know that. So I think this is a really great tip and something to consider, especially if you start an area, your campaign at a low level in a specific area. Make sure that they run into this old, they know the story of this old dungeon, and it's supposed to be contain this wealth of knowledge, and there's this big guardian, but you're there just to clear out rats, you know, and maybe the players will try to take it on and learn that it's stronger than they think, and they end up getting destroyed or getting their shit face kicked in, and then maybe later when they're level 5, they come back and see if they can still pass it. Or maybe it requires a specific item, and they go on a hunt to get that item.
That reminds me of Fable 3. I think it's the third one. That's the one where you gotta, like, You gotta save up a bunch of money to save the... Yeah, you have to stockpile a whole bunch of gold to save the nation or something like that. Like, oh, we need this much gold in order to save the world. I'm like, oh, okay. In the vault where that gold gets stored, as you get more money, it grows and grows and grows. And at the beginning of the game, when you get into that vault, when there's, like, nothing there, like, oh, there's a coin on the floor because I'm fucking poor. You look up, and there's a treasure chest at the top of the thing, and you slowly start to realize that as you gain more money, it gets more and more and more full. And you can eventually get to that chest when you get more money.
Use it as a ramp.
I think when you finally get enough, you use it as a ramp, you go up, you unlock it. I think it was the gender swap potion.
Oh, wow.
And I think that was it.
It should be a note. Congratulations, you're wealthy now.
That would have been great.
I think that'll do it
You have unlocked the Scrooge McDuck achievement.
Time to go swimming in my gold coins. That'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip, Guardian Rooms from the Inner Party Conflict Crew. Our player tip of the podcast is...
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by focusing on your arcane studies. Today we're talking mage armor.
I like how I'm seeing a pattern here. Whenever you have a player tip as regards to magic items or something like that, or learning it, you call it arcane studies, mm-hmm. and we're Crit Academy, we're like a school. Yeah. It's like, hey, that's clever.
How about martial training for the melee ones?
Yeah, because I'm an idiot. So I just not figured that out. gym class.
So, you know, mage armor is an interesting spell. You know, this spell is used in excess by wizards and other mages. Because without it, they're about as tough as paper against scissors. What the hell was I smoking when I wrote that? The PHB gives a very generic flavor for the spell. A protective magical force surrounds you until the spell ends. That's boring and generic, in my opinion. Because this is so generic, though, it really leaves us with a lot of options to use and a way to enhance the theme of our wizard. For example, if you are wanting that real elemental flavor for your character, you want to play Elsa and just let it go, you can describe your arcane mage or your arcane armor as like an ice barrier that encrystallizes you. What's that stupid ex-woman lady's name in that turns herself to like crystal in X-Men.
Emma Frost.
Yeah. Something like that.
Whose power is not cold based at all.
It was an example. Chill. Or Iceman, you know, he gets totally turned into ice. Or if you want a more fire flavor, maybe you look like a walking inferno. Or if it's wind, maybe there's a constant wind breeze around you and a spiral of wind or something like that. Or maybe you want a more ancient protector's kind of feel. So you go with like a guardian spirit, you know, maybe this guardian spirit is an ancestor that appears around you and deflects incoming blows with a sword and shield. Or maybe you go for a more combat aura based where a powerful aura surrounds you, something akin to like an animal. What's the DC chick's name that has the totems? She's in Arrowverse stuff. Damn, what's her name?
I don't know. I don't watch
DC. I know who you're talking about, but I'm drawing a blank too off the top of my head.
It starts with a V.
Vicky?
No, I don't think so. But anyways, she uses totems and big armor spirits surround her and give her power. You could do something like that. In this case,
Vixen.
Vixen, thank you. Yes, nailed it. Or if you want a more of a physical armor, you could be kind of like a Power Ranger, where like an arm. I was watching. I just shared a post of Mummies Alive, something like that, where you put your hands in front of your chest, and a green snake-like serpent with wings leaps out from your chest. It starts swoops out, flies around, coils around you, and wraps itself around you, and then like a form of like magical metal armor appears around you.
It's morphin' time.
Yes, very much so.
And I'll admit, with the Guardian Spirit one, I totally thought Stans from JoJo's Bizarre Adventures.
Yeah, that was one of the inspirations for that. So that's a really good reference to it as well. The Mage Armor is one of the most versatile spells for enhancing your flavor and not changing anything at all. What do you guys think about that?
The description does go a long way sometimes.
Yeah,
it does. That's what I liked about the Gun Mage I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Making my mage armor look like a transparent gem that surrounds him.
Yeah, and that was very unique to you and your character. And it goes without saying that most of your flavor that you want can come from spells like this that can be really whatever your imagination is. So, do you guys got anything else to talk about this?
When you were talking about using elemental armor, you said fire is like, maybe you're just a blaze. I just heard a Robot Chicken sketch where it's the Fantastic Four versus Doctor Doom. And he comes flying by and goes, oh no, it's the Fantastic Flamer. I'm the Human Torch, you ass.
That's funny.
Also made me think of Dr. McNinja.
Doctor who?
Dr. McNinja.
I don't know who that is.
What the fuck?
Ninjas can't grab you if you let yourself on fire.
Oh god. All right, I think that'll do it for our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid Dickitude by focusing on those arcane studies when it comes to that mage armor.
Seriously, though, read the webcomic Dr. McNinja, and it's currently finished, so...
I don't have time to read that shit, bro. I'm busy.
You say that without reading it first.
I'm busy.
Thing you'll ever read. It's great.
If you say so. All right, that'll do it for our show. Before we close up, we have another gift to give away. Compliments of our boy, Jeff Stevens.
Stevens.
A small village, empty of villages except for one boy, found sitting and weeping next to a jester's pageant wagon. The boy explains that the villagers, including his family, followed a jester into the wagon and never came out. What madness could the adventurers face? Can they save the villagers? Or will they go mad trying? Can you survive the madhouse of Tasha's Kiss?
Okay. Ian, who's our winner today?
Our winner today is James A. Wallace.
How fitting.
Congratulations, James A. Wallace. Please, if you enjoy the adventure, leave Jeff Stevens a review. I'm super excited, you guys.
Why?
He sent me the playtest version of, like, the next... It's not the same thing, but it's a very similar style adventure, and I cannot wait to read it. He sent it over the weekend, and if I had any internet, I would have read it then. Damn it.
Gotta go camping.
That'll do it for our show today. Please join us on our next episode, where we'll be discussing... Nothing. We are going to have a roundtable discussion and a mailbag episode.
Mailbag!
We're going to be answering
some... Here's the mail. It never fails when it comes out. Sorry.
Are you?
Ian's going to be on vacation enjoying Dragon Con.
Yep.
So I wanted to do something a little short. I'll be having a LAN party for World of Warcraft Classic, so there'll be some friends of mine joining me if they want, and we'll be doing a quick mailbag episode. Some questions that have been sent to us, some statements, topics that haven't been covered, all that jazz. Honestly, I kind of want to just go through and read some of our reviews and our emails that have been sent that aren't really about, that are just, hey, you guys did a good job. Some of them are hilarious.
You guys suck at jack wagons.
So that'll be a little bit different, and then we'll follow through. I forgot about that.
Some of the reviews I see on our books, it's when I see them, I assume the person who wrote them was sitting back wearing a scarf, smoking a pipe while they're typing.
That's funny.
When I read the document published by this fine establishment.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely check out our, pick up our challenge accepted product. It's doing really well and it's getting lots of great reviews. So if you have any feedback on our tips and tricks or topics you'd like us to discuss, please send them to us. You can email them to us at critacademy@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at Crit Academy.
We hope you've enjoyed your experience here at Crit Academy. If you did, you can help others find the show by leaving a hopefully 5-star review on iTunes or platform of your choice, or just send us a message telling us how much you enjoy the show.
Also, be sure to give us a like and a share.
If you enjoy the show, you can become a supporter for on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Patreon is a reward platform where you can pay different tiers and get access to fat loots, or you can buy our DM's Guild products. Please pick up our Challenge Accepted. It's an amazing product. Brandon also does commission, full body color art and line art. Head over to Facebook, our Facebook page, and check out the prices there.
I'll be doing it next weekend.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Make sure to subscribe to our show at CritAcademy.com. Follow us on twitch.tv/CritAcademy and subscribe on YouTube so we can help you on your future adventures as well as a chance to win cool prizes each and every week.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure to check out our fellowship members there as well.
Yeah, you can find Inner Party Conflict. Gabe and Jeff do an amazing job of answering your questions each and every week. Also, check out D&D Character Lab. Every week they make fantastic, fully overly complex characters and argue whose baby's better. Also, make sure to check out the Brute Force in Ignorance. They recently just started a new actual play, so check them out as well. If you're not already following the Kind GM, you need to be doing that. The guy does amazing content. On Twitter at The Kind GM or on Facebook at The Kind GM. That'll do it for our show today. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Brandon.
And I'm your co-host, Dan. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blade sharp and spells prepared, heroes.
I'm Batman.
What the fuck?